Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
Howdy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
That's nice, really nice, yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the VeloCast. Coming up on this week's show, EF Education and UAE dominate the Tour of Colombia. Egan Bernal sounds like an old man of cycling by spouting the road will decide Grand Tour cliches. And an actual grand old man of cycling, Nairo Quintana, turns the clock back to 2014. But first, as we discussed on last week's show, Tom Dumoulin hasn't exactly been in the best of fettle since his Giro d'Italia exit in 2019. The Dutchman had hoped that some early season racing in 2020 would see him build towards the Grand Boucle this July. However, being forced out of the Volta a Comunitat Valenciana, as well as the forthcoming Tirreno Adriatico and Milan-San Remo by illness, has certainly put a spanner in the spokes of those plans. This week we learned the nature of the newly signed Jumbo-Visma riders' malaise, internal parasites. And by releasing this gag-inducing diagnosis, only points to Dumoulin saying to us all, well, if I can't hold down the contents of my stomach, I'm going to make damn sure no one else can.
Do you know this whole thing where modern teams have mimicked Team Sky's, you know, marginal gains thing, all of the attention to detail? I think purposely catching some kind of stomach parasite so that you hope your form will get better when you're cured from it's taken that a step far.
Well, I found myself Googling internal parasites, or I beg your pardon, intestinal parasites, and wondering, in doing that as part of your job, what the hell has happened in my life to bring me to this? That aside, one of the symptoms of it is unexplained weight loss. And you had mentioned previously how Big Tam was looking very lean.
I mean, he's looking incredibly lean. You can see that in the pictures at the press conference, the pictures now that he's back on the bike training. And if it is something like this, the good thing is they've managed to identify it. I mean, you and me and other folk were worried about the long-term ramifications of that knee injury. But if this is something which can be dealt with, which he was unaware of, and he just had that general malaise feeling that he wasn't able to push his body. And make no mistake, when these guys are ill, they're still better than 99% of us on a bike. So he would still be able to go out and ride. But finding that, just that thing that's wrong, and knowing that it's still early in the season and you're able to fix it, I'm kind of optimistic now. I'm starting to think that when you look at the weight loss, when you look at the symptoms that he was describing, this might be the issue and not the knee. So I'm hoping we'll see Dumoulin back on absolute top form before the end of 2020.
Yeah, I mean, certainly fatigue is one of the symptoms of this kind of ailment. And during the aforementioned Googling, I also discovered that some of the things that you might do in order to determine whether you have such. These included what's called the Scotch tape test. Which involves applying tape to the anus several times in order to retrieve pinworm eggs, which can be identified under a microscope. Now, I don't care whether anyone here likes Tom Dumoulin as a rider or not. All I'm going to say is I wouldn't wish hearing your doctor say, if you just drop your trousers so I can repeatedly tape up your arse, on anyone. Oh, absolutely, well, anyone.
I tell you, I thought the worst anal-related procedure you could get was, you know, porn stars apparently bleach their anuses now.
Didn't know that. Well, thank you for including that in the oeuvre of anal-related disgusting things that we're talking about today.
Well, you've learned something now, but, I mean, the thought of just scotch taping your arse to see if there are eggs in there, I feel a bit sick now. We might have to take a break so that I can go and lie down.
I mean, getting back to your point about feeling better about Tom Dumoulin.
Imagine if your arse was hairy as well.
Well, I know you're getting a free Brazilian into the bargain. Interestingly, getting back on point, neither Tom nor Jumbo are saying which particular parasite this is. Now, while I'm with you in that we hope that this is something that has been identified from the symptoms first of all and then going to the doctor to get it treated, I'd have more faith in this "I'm feeling much better" claim, which he has done. He took to Twitter to say that he's started medication and feeling much, much better, and has had some good training sessions over the weekend. Mm-hmm. But I'd be putting much more faith in this kind of claim if they'd revealed the exact ailment. Just saying intestinal parasites is a bit like saying I've broken a bone. You are begging the question, well, which bone? Leg, collar, metacarpal? You know, knowing which will let us know how significant this is in terms of the recovery time. So while I'm with you and hoping this is indeed the issue and that they are getting it sorted and it's nothing to do with the knee, there is enough potential obfuscation at play here to make me just keep my Roger Moore eyebrow of incredulity, a partially hoisted status until we see Tam back riding again.
Do you know what, though? If we find out that Ridley Scott's lined up to direct his biopic, we'll know he's in real trouble, wouldn't we?
I think we should probably move away from the, no pun intended, thorny issue of intestinal parasites to talk about how Nairo Quintana has delivered his first victory for his new Arkea Samsic team. The Colombian took the Tour de Provence from the Astana duo of Alexander Vlasov at 1 minute and 4 seconds back and Alexei Lutsenko at 1 minute and 28. A win car from a very impressive attack on Stage 3's Mont Ventoux.
Yeah, young Vlasov had held the leader's jersey before that stage. And on a reasonably short stage that finished at Chalet Renard before the Woods finish, and Mont Ventoux, to that point, Nairo apparently put the fastest time ever recorded up there, faster than Marco Pantani, faster than Miguel Indurain, faster than Lance Armstrong. Which, of course, led to all the people with their, you know, their pencils in their back of a fag packet to say, I don't like it when they beat times by renowned dopers. There's a few things we have to bear in mind. But first, can I just say how happy, and it's hard to tell, we know that, but how happy Nairo Quintana looks in that Arkea Samsic jersey. The colours look great on him. He's on a Canyon bike, which we know he likes. The team actually now, just like Education First, actually, who we'll come to later in this show, look like a cohesive unit who are really willing to work for their leader. I mean, they worked like dogs at the foot of the climb where Nairo stamped his authority on this race to get him in a position to attack, which he did from a long way out. But before we do the kind of the tinfoil hat stuff, there was a tailwind on the day. It wasn't a tour stage, and all of those previous faster times to Chalet Renard were set as partial split climbs where they then had to carry on to the top of Ventoux, past the kind of moonscape to the mast. So, they would make the times artificially slow when you compare it to something that actually stops at Chalet Renard, as Nairo's climb did. He attacked at 7 kilometres out, which meant he didn't have any kind of tactical shenanigans or anything. He was able just to put his head down and have a big dig. So it was a hugely impressive ride. And there were some huge numbers from other people. People putting out 400 watts for half an hour. I think it was Sepp Kuss who put out 374 watts, for half an hour to do that climb. I mean, it's February, for God's sake. But Nairo's wireless, it's a really impressive win, and it's a fantastically impressive climb. I think it's just a reflection that he looks more relaxed, he looks happier, and that's bringing the kind of form which saw him, spring to all our consciousnesses when he attacked in the Tour de France. I think the move to Arkea Samsic has changed him into the rider we expected him to be, and I really hope we see that develop as the year progresses. Although some people rather unkindly were saying that, Nairo probably thought it was his final attack from the 2013 Tour.
And by some people you mean you, don't you? I mean, let's don't beat about the bush here. No, I mean, all of what you said there is absolutely bang on, because there's no way you can compare a tour stage to the Tour de Provence, which is only 4 stages long. The tailwind that you mentioned, plus very significantly how the majority of the really hard racing you're cognizant of is up ahead of Charlie Renard. It's not in that wooded section to it. It's really just the settle yourself in for the climb part of Ventoux. So I'm kind of surprised that there was, even with the madness of social media in mind, that there was any kind of talk of, oh, tinfoil hattery, this must... You know, this looks suspicious because of the claim of a new record being set. That's just foolish in my book. Speaking of jerseys, which you wear several moments ago, and how Nairo looks really comfortable in the Arkea Samsic jersey, I think the Leaders jersey for the Tour de Provence is absolutely amazing. It's a proper old school Pierre Mondrian La Vie Claire affair, and I'm totally here for it. Well done, that race.
Yeah, it brought to mind the old combined jersey that they used to have in the Tour, and the kind of, you know, in the Eno era. I remember seeing Eno in Le Monde, and it there's an element of nostalgia, which I think it suits our age group a bit better than maybe the young ones. But it just made me happy seeing it. And the whole race was absolutely brilliant, actually. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So good to see Nairo back in form. It's only February. I find it quite surreal watching, you know, reasonably big hitters racing up Ventoux, albeit to, you know, just to Charlie Renard in February. But I'm not going to complain, because it was an afternoon I thoroughly enjoyed watching.
Best part of that, aside of course from Nairo's fantastic attack and win, I think has to be Sepp Kuss moving onto Nairo's wheel when he attacked, and then that being immediately followed by his leg shouting to him, "Not today, Satan! No, 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 no!"
Aye, that's no happening.
Well, among the plethora of races getting underway in the coming days, including the Volta a Algarve and the Ruta del Sol, is the UAE Tour. 2020 will only be the second edition of the race, but this year there'll barely be a cycling fan in the whole world who will not be glued to any coverage coming from the Arabian Peninsula. The reason? Chris Froome's return to racing.
And by gum, is there a bit of a media blast going along with it, with people saying, you can't write him off. You know, he's a real champion. They're wheeling out his original coach from South Africa. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff to make it feel important that Chris is coming back. And I'm slightly conflicted about that, because I think it would be nice if he could just have a relatively low-key return to the peloton, and he'll try and downplay it. But of course, it's a huge bit of news. I mean, there are big hitters starting to race. We've got Vincenzo Nibali's first outing in a Trek jersey coming up, Froome himself starting in the UAE Tour. But it's so early. Please, people, don't start all this extrapolation of, he looked like he was pedalling hard there, he'll be good in the Tour. It's February, you know, we have to keep the heat. We'll look at indicators of form as the year progresses and the races that are important to these riders come close. But if Chris has a bad UAE Tour, don't write him off. You know, it's just the first step in coming back to racing. And if he has a brilliant one, don't say, oh, he's going to win the Tour. It's just too early. But all good wishes to him. That was a horrific crash. And to come back to the peloton at all is a huge achievement, and he deserves some credit for that, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I think we should give the guy a round of applause for his commitment to get to this point. I mean, there were legitimate concerns that he would never walk again after that accident. But you're absolutely right with all of what you've said there. We shouldn't expect anything. Moreover, I don't think we should draw, like you said, any conclusion from whatever Froome or anybody else does here. And I would say that whether he was returning from a life-threatening accident or not, it is February. It's only chapter one of a story that will, one way or another, culminate in July. And I would actually extend that. I'm sure this is what you were alluding to as well, but to put that fine point on it, I would extend that to say Primoz Roglic as well. Mm-hmm. Last year, Primoz, of course, won this race, but he was, as you'd talked about before, in amazing form at the start of the year, but also looking towards a tilt at the Giro. This year, he wants to win the Tour. It's February. Just don't draw any conclusions about any rider in this race, or indeed any race, but all of which is to say it's fantastic to watch these guys as they make their way towards their big objectives for the year, whether it is the Tour, the Vuelta, or for the classics guys heading towards the spring races. It's just great to see bike racing again, and special amongst that, I guess, is Chris Froome, because of the accident he was involved in.
you know what, though? You mentioned it at the head of the show. Although we are saying, don't play it up, don't play it up, you've also got Egan Bernal starting to make noises about the, you know, the road will decide who's the leader. And also Geraint Thomas making noises about how he's lighter than he's ever been at this time of year and his power numbers are fantastic. So I think we'll get some mileage talking up some rivalry within Team Sky because there is some shuffling going on.
Well, yeah, as you say, speaking of the Tour de France, the reigning champion Egan Bernal has said that he believes the leadership at the Tour this year will only be decided by who's the strongest and on the road. Unfortunately, Bernal did not reveal whether it will be a game of two halves, who he thought the next Eddie Merckx was, or in which stages you can certainly not win the race, but you could definitely lose it. It's a measured, intelligent interview from Bernal. What I was not drawing conclusions from, but certainly it did make me pause for a second, was it's not painting that picture that you were discussing towards the end of last year about an ego the size of a gas giant and this kind of kneel before Zod era-defining champion that we all expect to see come to fruition across the next few years. Certainly these guys are very different on and off the bike, but I think what I'm just saying is he's not exactly coming out swinging. It's all very, oh, I'll do my best and hope this means I'll be team leader.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really measured, really intelligent guy. And the most telling bit of that entire interview for me was when, you know, he pointed out that the team themselves were really ruthless and we'd have no hesitation in designating a leader and trying to get everybody else into line if, you know, if one of them proved to be the strongest on the road by far. I think Ineos, with their management, who, you know, they have shown themselves to be willing to make hard decisions in the past, often to the detriment of riders who felt they should have been served better, I think. But they won't suffer the same fate as Movistar going in with that, you know, this trident, the triumvirate of leaders, because I think Brailsford and the backroom staff will actually just say, you know, he's better, you have to support him. And I think we saw a bit of that with Geraint Thomas in, you know, in last year's tour, even though Geraint said if, you know, if they'd been able to finish that stage that was truncated, he was planning to do something. I think the team, they showed they can manage that kind of situation, and Bernal seems to confirm that in this interview.
And to Geraint Thomas and these claims of being lighter than he's ever been and numbers being great, that's not what I heard. I heard over the past week or so that Geraint's actually pretty worried about his weight coming out of the winter and his feeling that he has to work harder to make it to the big races that he wants to make it to this year.
Well, he's Welsh, isn't he? I mean, there's all those faggots to eat.
I beg your pardon?
Actually, that came out entirely wrong at so many levels. I think we'll just move swiftly along. I think Thomas has a slight tendency to enjoy himself a bit much off-season. I think he does have a huge amount of dedication and a huge amount of discipline once you're actually in the season, and I think he'll turn up ready. He surprised me by how ready he was last year. You know, I thought that year that he won might have just been a flash in the pan, but he was a genuine, incredible contender last year. I think when it comes time, Geraint Thomas will be ready.
Now, Sergio Higuita has claimed his first win in EF Education colours. The 22-year-old built his Tour of Colombia title from the team's opening day TTT, but also by taking stage three in Santa Rosa.
Absolutely stunning performance from Education First. You know, we made some excuses for the other teams in them winning the team time trial when we discussed it last week. What they showed throughout the race was they'd come ready to win, were prepared to support Higuita absolutely to the hilt, and were so powerful that I actually saw quite a few people who I take quite seriously when I read their opinions say, this is going to be Education First year. They're certainly the best I've ever seen them at this time of the year, and Higuita's proven that he's up there. There were some serious, serious guys capable of very, very impressive climbing, and he took them all on and won.
It's February. Don't draw any conclusions.
No, I mean, who knows? It's kind of your job to draw ridiculous conclusions while simultaneously being hypocrites and telling other people not to do that. But
no, I think there's a difference here. Just sorry to cut across you. I think the difference here is EF Education First aren't at the point in their development, I'm sure Jonathan Vauters will be looking to, as he always is, looking to the future. But to see EF Education First at this point in the season looking so good is just great in and of itself. It doesn't need to be, you know, the first step in building towards a season-conquering performance for them. Just being this good in February means that they'll be good for other races that they've got planned. But it's not that same burden of, oh, how are they going to look in February compared to what does that mean for July? Because that's not the kind of team that they are. But you're right, a hugely impressive performance from start to finish. I mean, when you look at the GC for the entire race, it's a 1-2-3 for them. Higuita, yeah. Danny Martinez and Jonathan Caicedo.
Yeah, I mean, Danny Martinez is hugely impressive as well. So it's going to be a good year for them. The problem they've got is they're actually, you know, they're looking to come into the year as strong as this. And we're looking already. And we can't look forward. I'm going to say it again. At lots of other people who also look like they're going to have landmark years. So it's conceivable Education First could have the year of their dreams, but there might just be people better on a given day. But all hail, you know, the conquering heroes of the Tour of Colombia. Brilliant ride. We should also say that another team that maybe, I'm loath to say are a bit second division, but really haven't been in our consciousness quite as much, UAE. Juan Sebastian Milano won three stages, absolutely stunning. And do you remember when we were talking about Gaviria, I said how Rashesi had been such an important signing. Juan Sebastian Milano was quick to provide credit to Max Rashesi for his ability as a lead-out man as well. But to take three stages, stunning start to the win. And brace yourself, people, here comes the cliche, sprinters run on confidence, you know?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. To take three stages in a week-long race and the points jersey, of course, is very impressive for anybody. And I'm sure that there'll be all the top-tier sprinters now looking at Milano and recognising that they need to be wary of him. That kind of confidence-building run in a stage race gets carried forward, and they shouldn't take the UAE rider lightly whenever they come wheel-to-wheel with them at the start line. Going just back to EF Education, because we missed one important part of their week, that Danny Martinez also took stage six. So it was, honours were just basically shared between the two teams.
Yeah.
There wasn't, nobody else in the race got anywhere near a look in.
Yeah, and make no mistake, I mean, people like Ineos hadn't come just to make up the numbers. These were,
I mean, some punter named Egan Bernal was fourth, almost a minute back on GC. Sheesh.
That's his year ruined now. He'll never make it in the Tour.
That's it.
No, I mean, seriously, there were proper opposition. You know, people like Hodge for the sprinters for Milano to beat. So they weren't soft wins, is the point I'm trying to get. So Jonathan Vauters and his squad can sit in the team bus absolutely delighted. They beat some proper opposition who turned up in good form. You know, they went in bad form, and hopefully they can build on that. You know, who knows, it might be a fantastic Giro for them. Also, can I just say, fantastic to see Rigoberto Urán back racing and hugely contributing as well. You know, Rigo is always somebody who makes me smile, so to see him back on the bike and competitive was fantastic. So not just Chris Froome that we're happy to see back in the peloton.
Just before we go, it's a very short show this week because
it's about twice as long as I thought it was going to be, mate.
There's not a lot of news coming from the cycling world this week. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of races just about to start in the coming days. One of them indeed has just started, the Ruta del Sol, where Jakob Fuglsang actually took the opening stage and a hilly finish ahead of Mikel Landa. Now, Landa had been making quite big noises coming into this race about wanting to have a good opening, and I can imagine he won't be too happy at being beaten, I mean, quite significantly by Jakob Fuglsang today.
Yeah, hilly finale. I've got to say, for Landa, he was quite open about the fact that he didn't know what his form was, I think, but he said if the opportunity came to win, he would do it. But at some point, Mikel Landa has to stop having excuses and start having results. You know, and I think we're running out of time. I really like Landa as a rider. I'd like to see him win and win big. But he always seems to just find somebody who's that wee bit better than him. And I think in Fuglsang, he found somebody with a point to make. You know.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we will have to draw an absolute conclusion about Mikael's statements going into this race at the end of the stage race itself. I mean, as I say, I was only kind of pointing to how he probably would have liked to at least been within touching distance of Fuglsang, which is, I think, a better frame of mind. But he was comprehensively beaten.
He's barely in the picture.
No, exactly. And as I say, once we get to the end of the race, we can see how his performance actually was and what this will perhaps augur for the rest of his. Oh God, I'm being a hypocrite in saying this, but I think, you know, when you talk about the confidence of sprinters, I think someone like Landa needs the confidence of wins early on in his new Bahrain Merida team just to keep the momentum flowing for him. I can see him getting his head down if those early wins don't come for him.
Yeah, and there's nobody to blame this time. You know, the entire weight is on his shoulders. He can't say, oh, I was part of a triumvirate and they favoured the others, or, you know, I went there expecting to be given the lead, but I ended up as a super domestique. You know, it's Mikael Landa's year. He has to make of it the very best that he can. Having said that, second behind Fuglsang in a hilly finish, your form's no crap.
No, definitely no. I mean, it wasn't like he was nowhere, but certainly nowhere near the win, yeah. Which is unfortunately the point. The other big race, as I just mentioned earlier, is the Volta ao Algarve, which we'll be glued to as well. Geraint Thomas essentially kind of starting that as a domestique. He's not looking to prove anything going into this race.
No, and that's why I think, going back to my earlier comments about Geraint being ready, he seems a rider who is really happy to ride for just training. You know, he has no pretension to, unlike Landa saying, if the wind's there, I'll take it. You know, you won't get Geraint Thomas saying that if he turns up for a training race. It'll be interesting to watch. I mean, Algarve's going to be really interesting for loads of reasons. There's lots of big hitters starting their season. Lots of the teams will be, you know, sprinters who have moved team will maybe be looking to build their lead-out trains, even though they're less relevant than they were back in the day. So there's going to be a lot to learn. But I don't know if I've mentioned it already, but don't draw too many conclusions, people.
Of those riders that are coming to this race, the ones I think we really need to mention, apart from like Geraint Thomas and Vincenzo Nibali, Remco Evenepoel is coming to this race along with Mathieu van der Poel. So those two riders, I think, will have a lot of attention from cycling fans as to what they're going to do. I mean, especially Remco Evenepoel, this is a big test for him in his GC ambitions going forward.
Yeah, and he's going to pass it with flying colours, isn't he? I mean, he's just magnificent. Him and Mathieu van der Poel are two names that we're going to be mentioning. If we're still doing this in 10 years, God forbid, we'll be talking about Mathieu van der Poel and Remco Evenepoel. I expect Remco to do well. I'm not sure what his main objectives are for the year. I suspect he's going to really be one of the big players in some of the classics. But yeah, I mean, there's loads of folk to watch. If you're going to watch one race, Ruta del Sol is good, but I think we'll learn more going forward about you know, who's settled into their new teams, if not in their form long term at the Volta Algarve.
Now, just before, I mean, I've said this already, but before we go, it's becoming like a Monty Python sketch, this show. John, I believe you have some pimping to do.
Well, I want to pimp two things. We've made the early shows of this season free to listen. The weekly shows, the listenership has been through the roof for our numbers because we haven't charged for them. You know, they've been out there for everybody to download. However, now we're getting into the season, it's time, if you haven't already, please consider joining us as a premium subscriber. You know, the Chris Sidwell show, which had such a fantastic response in the first show about Tom Simpson, the second show went out at the weekend and it was for premium subscribers only. We've got fantastic response about that as well. Going forward, the daily race analysis shows that we do will be premium subscribers only, and that's by far the bulk of our content. You know, the weekly shows are essentially just taking over, keeping, you know, people informed, keeping ourselves informed. But once we get into the race season, and proper. The daily shows are where we really start to have fun and we can go into deeper analysis of what happens during the races. So Velocast.cc, $5.99 a month, you know, a couple of coffees is the cliche that everybody talks about, and we'll keep you absolutely to the best of our ability informed and entertained throughout the season with both historical stuff like Chrissy's and also the daily race analysis as, you know, as the season progresses. Also at Velocast.cc, we're stopping at the end of February ordering for our Calas 10th anniversary Velocast kit. It's going well, but get your order in before the end of the month because I'll be placing the order very, very early in March, and at that point we won't be able to add anything to it. You can expect delivery of the kit, which is absolutely fantastic, in the middle of April, so second, third week in April, because Calas are usually spot on with their lead times. If you want to look really stylish during the summer, it's one of Scott's best designs. I love it. Some people have got them all, so thank you very much for that. And I've noticed a few familiar names ordering the anniversary kit. But if you ordered one of the first ever jerseys from us, which were made out of sport wool by Shut Velo Rapide, send me a picture of you in it and we'll do you a 20% discount on the anniversary kit.
Well, thank you for joining us today as we had the dubious pleasure of discussing Beasties in Your Belly, where you had the debatable honour of having to listen to it. That said, we hope that you can find your way back to us again with all the speed of Tom Dumoulin disappearing behind an Italian road sign for the next edition of The Velocast.